Scott Hughes, Rick Horton.
This is a season like no other.
Unbelievable start from Hamilton.
He's just insane.
Oh, they touch! Verstappen is into the lead! Come on!
This is the F1 Podcast. Two soft compounds.
Hello there. Welcome again along to the podcast off the back of the Miami Grand Prix, the first ever Miami Grand Prix. I was a little bit concerned at the start of the race that it was going to be very kind of boring and processional because it wasn't
and it was.
The world's most exciting race at the start, was it? And then we got a safety car. Hey!
Well, eventually we did. But I thought, you know, they were all talking before the race about, you know, oh, there's going to be multiple safety cars and red flags and all kinds of stuff. And it never really panned out that way, did it?
No, it's a funny circuit, isn't it? Because it felt very much like, you know, a bit Monaco-y, where it's all kind of glitz and glamour, and the area itself is like the star of the show, and lots of celebrities there, and lots of people going, yeah, we're in America, and Florida's great, and this is where I live, and everything's amazing, and hot weather, and, you know, all that kind of stuff was great. There was loads of stuff before the race in itself where they, you know, they had PR opportunities with the drivers, and they had Formula One cars on the beach, and all that kind of stuff, and it just had everything you want glitz and glamour wise. But then the actual race itself at the start particularly was just very like, you know, okay, here we go, and again, qualifying wasn't the world's most exciting, was it? And I mean, it very much this year is Red Bull versus Ferrari. We've seen that, you know, we've been at a number of races now, and that's obviously the way it's going to pan out for this season. The Mercedes looking slightly better in this race, and they have got some upgrades coming, so, you know, the Merc is best of the rest at the moment. Still nowhere near where they want to be. I'm still fascinated by how much, you know, Hamilton is losing out really to George Russell. Yeah. I'd love to have seen George Russell in last year's Mercedes to see, because if you remember when he replaced Hamilton, when Hamilton had COVID and he replaced him, he kind of blew Bottas out of the water, didn't he? And the only reason he didn't win that race is because of reliability issues. And I'm fascinated, like, how it would have been if he was in that car last year, you know, instead of Bottas against Hamilton. Would he have given Hamilton a run for his money? Because, you know, we've kind of given a few excuses on this podcast, haven't we, about, you know, Hamilton's used to driving the best car and he's struggling because the car's nowhere near as good as it that he's been used to. Whereas George Russell's used to a bit of a dog of a car. And, you know, is that an excuse? Would Hamilton be in the same boat here if they had last year's car? It'd be fascinating, wouldn't it, to find out?
Yeah, you know, I watched it on Sunday, as everyone did, the Miami race. The first thing that it reminded me of was the Long Beach Grand Prix in IndyCar. Very similar sort of track layout to that. But, yeah, George Russell, I think, up until now, I've given Hamilton the benefit of the doubt, and we've mentioned it on this podcast many times, is that, you know, George Russell is used to struggling with a weaker car because he performed so well at Williams. But now I'm starting to think that he actually might be, you know, it's not looking good for Hamilton's status of greatest of all time, is it? Because he's got a teammate now who basically overtook him twice in Miami in the same equipment. I'm thinking, yeah, it's not looking good for Hamilton's greatest of all time status. And George Russell just looks nailed on. You know, he's the only driver to finish to the top five at every single race this season. He's been consistent when Hamilton hasn't. He's outperformed the car where Hamilton hasn't. I'm just wondering if he's a better driver.
Yeah, and, you know, how much of this is the hunger factor? How much of this is him wanting to be, you know, as good as, if not better than Hamilton? And how much of this is Hamilton going, oh, I've not got a car that I can win with. So, you know, he kind of maybe lost a bit of interest. I don't know. Maybe he's, you know, because he's basically completed everything he can complete in the sport. The only thing he needs to do is get an eighth world title to be, on paper, the greatest of all time. And he's broken all the other records pretty much, hasn't he? So is he just losing a bit of motivation because the car's not great, and because he can't win, he's kind of like, well, what's the point? And is George Russell, you know, really, really hungry to prove that he's the next generation star? And I don't know. I think the only way you could ever answer a lot of these questions if you put every single driver in the same car, you know, if every driver does a qualifying lap and a few racing laps in the same car, that's where you go, okay, well, that's obviously the best driver. I mean, for me, what's fascinating, if you go back in time, I always thought Ayrton Senna was the greatest of all time. That would be my pick of the greatest of all time. But I know Ayrton Senna was a massive fan of some of the drivers that came before him. And, you've got drivers that come along at each point that are considered the greatest of all time, and then the next generation's greatest of all time. Like I say, for me, it was Ayrton Senna would be the greatest ever. But obviously Hamilton loves Ayrton Senna as well. Now, people are saying, oh, you know, is Hamilton better than Ayrton Senna? For me, no, he isn't. But he is one of the greatest of all time. But that's just because, you know, he's had this amazing car. It's taking nothing away from him because he is a phenomenal driver. And he has, you know, outperformed a lot of his teammates before. I thought the most fascinating season for me was when it was Hamilton versus Alonso, I think, at McLaren. Because they were so evenly matched, if you remember it. It came down to a point or two, didn't it, between those two. And he's another driver that I think currently is one of the greatest of all time, is Fernando Alonso. I think he's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, no, I would agree. I think it's difficult for Hamilton at the moment because he's competing alongside a young, hungry George Russell. He's not happy with the car, obviously. George Russell, someone said on Sky's coverage over the weekend, which I thought was really interesting, George Russell has an engineers meeting for the sake of having an engineers meeting, in that he is thoroughly nailed down to the data and he goes and sits with his engineers for absolutely ages to go through all of the things that he could work on or tweak or improve, and he gives the feedback to the mechanics, and he does this methodically every single race weekend. And I'm guessing that's because George Russell is young and hungry and wants to learn and wants to improve. Maybe Hamilton's got to the stage now where he doesn't need to give as much input as he used to because, you know, he is the team leader and he's won 7 championships, and, you know, maybe he's not on the ball as much as we think. You know, maybe George Russell is the guy that's really pushing that team along at the moment, because they did have upgrades in Miami. They had the new front wing and rear wing, which was basically stripping a little bit of downforce off the car and giving them more straight line speed. I still think they have a problem with their power unit. It's just not as fast as the Ferrari powered or the Red Bull powered cars. Interesting. I think it's one that's going to go on for the next couple of races, because at the moment, like you say, it's difficult to say whether George Russell is a better driver than Hamilton, but at the moment on paper, it looks as though that's the case.
Yeah, and I think the fascinating thing is, we've mentioned this before in previous seasons, where Mercedes, if they have an issue, they sort it within a week. And, you know, there's been many times where we've gone, oh, is this it? Is this the end of Mercedes? Oh, they've had a shocking race. And within 7 days, they've got whatever the issue was, they've found it, they've sorted it, and they've upgraded it or whatever and changed the car, and the car's back on top again. And you're like, oh, here we go, they're back at the top. This is the first season I can remember since the hybrid era, really, where they are properly struggling. They can't seem to work out what's wrong. You know, they're bringing upgrades, like you say, but they're still not great. They're the best of the rest, aren't they? But they're nowhere near the Ferrari or the Red Bull. And I guess the other thing to look at is, with regards to the Red Bull, that's obviously the best car, but it's got reliability issues, whereas the Ferrari is not quite as good as the Red Bull, but it's got no reliability issues. Every race that Verstappen has finished this year, he's won. So that Red Bull is tremendous. You know, the engine, the package, everything about that car is just great, apart from the reliability, the odd reliability issue. And you can see that, I think, with Perez being up there. You know, it's kind of Perez is qualifying in the top four most races as well. So to have Perez up there, that's great for the team. But, you know, that's a fascinating battle as well, where you've got Ferrari playing the long game of, you know, if the Red Bull loses or goes out and doesn't finish the race, we're winning it, we're having it. If the Red Bull's in the race and it wins, they're coming second. So they're playing that whole long game thing at Ferrari. Whereas, you know, the Red Bull team need to sort these reliability issues out, otherwise they can't win this championship.
Yeah, I thought what was interesting in Miami with the Red Bull and Ferrari is Red Bull have got a 6 mile an hour straight line speed difference to the Ferrari, so they're faster. So when you saw Max Verstappen overtake Charles Leclerc in the Miami Grand Prix, there was nothing he could do about it, Leclerc. Even with DRS on that long back straight, there was no way he was going to overtake the Red Bull because of its straight line speed. So it really was quite showing, I think, that speed difference in Miami. Because once the Ferraris get overtaken, they're almost helpless to fight back. Whereas earlier in the season, we saw that they were able to exchange places over several laps. But this Miami Grand Prix just proved that, you know, that straight line speed that the Red Bull has is far superior to the Ferrari. So once they get, you know, fine, qualify in pole position, but once you get overtaken, there's not much you can do about it. The reliability issue is definitely a thing for Red Bull. Perez would have finished second in that Miami Grand Prix had he not had that power loss halfway through the race.
I thought the most American thing about this Grand Prix was at the end when they were interviewing the drivers and they had Willie T. Ribbs who come on. He's like, "Hey, how you guys doing? Hey, talk to me about the car, baby. How's it going, baby? How are you enjoying the Miami Heat, baby?" And I was like, I'm watching it going, what's happening here? And it was such a great example of America versus the rest of the world, wasn't it? In terms of most Formula One drivers are European and they kind of live that European thought plan and stuff. And you got Charles Leclerc just kind of looking at this guy going, I don't really know what he's asking me here, but I'll just tell him how the race was anyway. I thought that was so American at the end. That's the most American thing I've ever seen, I think.
Yeah, the drivers coming onto the podium in American football helmets. It's like, I read a couple of things on Twitter and there were some American fans going, okay, if you thought a country was tacky, now you really know it is. But, you can't help but think that they do put on a great show.
They do spectacle well, don't they?
Yeah, can you imagine what it's going to be like in Las Vegas next year? Yeah. It's just going to be nuts. Yeah, absolutely crazy. I thought there was some lovely moments of that Grand Prix. I thought Martin's grid walk was one of the best ever because he couldn't walk. You know, it was so busy on the grid. It was unbelievable. But one of my favourite moments was when Mario Andretti was talking to Zak Brown on the grid and Martin went over and interviewed them both. And Mario said, oh, I'd love to get into one of these cars. And Zak Brown said, you know what? In Austin, we're going to do that. You're going to drive a McLaren car in Austin. And his face was like the face of a seven-year-old who's just been given the keys to a sweet shop. I mean, it was I actually shed a tear. I thought it was it was one of those moments where you think, oh, wow, man, that's just great.
Yeah, he's like 82, isn't he? So that's like that's going to be that will be the equivalent of a seven-year-old getting a go in a Formula One car for him. It's just the opposite end of his life. But you're right, it was a lovely moment, and it made me laugh as well. I think it was Martin who said, if we could get in the current crop of Formula One cars, Mario's like, oh, I'll get in it. Yeah. There's no chance I'm not getting in this car.
I might not get out, but I'll get in.
But yeah, you're right, and I think things like that are what everything in the world is so boring. And horrible and there's just no nice stuff happening in the world at the moment. So when you see moments like that, you think, oh, that's good. That's relit my fire for life. That's made me think that good stuff still happens to good people. And like you say, he looks so happy, didn't he? So that would be lovely to watch that in Austin.
Yeah, it really will. Now, apparently, according to Ted Kravitz, the Hamilton piercings row is going to get really nasty. He's been given an exemption in Miami and again in Spain. This is mainly about his nose stud, apparently. So he's removed his earrings already. But of course, he's been protesting doing the press conference with the most amount of jewellery ever, including four watches and 19 neck chains. But Hamilton said over the weekend, he said, listen, we have reserve drivers. If they won't let me drive with a nose stud, then so be it. I won't drive, which is, you can see that heading into a bit of a heated battle, can't you?
Yeah, and I think this is the problem, isn't it? Because Hamilton can't win this championship this year, he's in this zone now of, well, okay, what else can I do? And, can I change anything? Can I change the world? So he's thinking, well, okay, if I have to protest and not race, then I will, because it doesn't mean anything to him this year, does it? He can't win the title. If he was leading the world championship, he wouldn't be making that comment. I'll tell you that now. But obviously he can make that comment because he's not, and he won't be leading the world championship. And I see both sides because, I've done some racing before. It's very important to have the fireproof stuff on. If you are involved in an accident, it's horrible. No one wishes that on anybody. It's not a part of the sport that we ever enjoy to see. And they are bringing these rules in for safety. Imagine if you've got a gold chain on and you're in a crash like Romain Grosjean had where you've got that fireball. That necklace is going to be absolutely red hot and it's going to be a nightmare. That's, you don't want to be thinking, oh, I've got to take my necklace off because it's burning my skin. You don't want to be thinking about things like that. Stuff like that shouldn't be on you. So I see that side, the safety side and the FIA side of things. But I also see the driver side of things where, even Vettel, didn't he, wore a pair of pants over his race suit. And the drivers are kind of like, look, we're taking risks. We're getting in Formula One cars. We're taking risks. If we want to wear jewellery or whatever, that's got to be our risk. That's got to be our understanding. And so I see both sides. Martin Brundle is always saying things like he wasn't a fan of the halo at first, was he, Martin Brundle? And he's a big fan of, look, if you're getting in a Formula One car, you know the risks. He's got that kind of mentality. And I think a lot of these drivers have that risk. But at the same time, we don't want to see anything like that happen. So I'm so on the fence on this one. It's weird.
Let's talk about some of the other teams during the Miami Grand Prix. Fernando Alonso got a fine and a penalty after the race for aggressive driving. And he held his hands up and he went, yeah, you know what? I was far too aggressive. He made contact with several other cars. And then you've got the Mick Schumacher-Sebastian Vettel crash. Because, of course, Sebastian Vettel is like a mentor to Mick Schumacher. They're best of friends.
Like a father figure, isn't he? Almost?
Yeah, it all hails back to Vettel's respect for Michael Schumacher, obviously the father of Mick Schumacher, and so he treats him with kid gloves at every race. I thought it was really quite sad that after the race, when Mick Schumacher was asked about that collision, he said, I need to speak to Seb, I need to learn from it, he needs to teach me. Because obviously they came together in the latter stages of the race and both took each other out. And I think it was probably Mick Schumacher's fault for lunging down the inside when there really wasn't a gap to go for. But that was a quite interesting battle.
Yeah, and again, like you say, it's, you know, this is the problem when you're friends with somebody on the Formula One grid. You know, you can't really be mates. You know, you see it a lot with drivers that are in the same team. You know, the McLaren guys always seem friendly. You had that great relationship with Lando and Carlos when they drove together. And you can kind of have a bit of that within the team. But I think other teams, it's almost impossible to be really friendly. I think there was a comment that Daniel Ricciardo made where he had to apologise for a crash. And he said, look, the crash happened. It was my fault. He said, but every ounce of my body was like, I hate doing this and apologising because I don't want to be the one at fault. I don't want to apologise. And it kind of needs to be a bit like that, isn't it? It's, although it is a team sport, it is every man for themselves. And you always see the most selfish drivers, and the drivers that get the most angry on the radio are generally the drivers that do the best. You know, the sulkers, you know, you've got Verstappen sulks, Hamilton sulks, Alonso sulks. They're all radio sulkers because that's how they drive. That's how they get their adrenaline, and that's how they get through the races. And that's why they're some of the best in the world. But, you know, sometimes I think Mick is a good driver, but he's a bit passive, isn't he? Kind of like, you know, oh, I made a mistake there. I need to find out why I made that mistake and why it was my fault. And he's not really got that fight and that passion that some of these world championship drivers have.
Yeah, he was on for his first ever points finish in Formula One and kind of screwed up, didn't he? Let's get some stats, post-race stats from Miami. From Nicky. He's at Lights Out. You can follow him on Twitter, Race to Race, and even when the races aren't on, his stats are fantastic on his social media feeds. Here he is with all the stuff you need to know from the Miami Grand Prix.
Verstappen takes the first Miami win. Leclerc inherits the longest finishing streak, and Mercedes fail to win the first race at a new circuit for the first time in 10 years. Here are the top statistics from the 2022 Miami Grand Prix weekend. Max Verstappen took victory in the inaugural Miami Grand Prix, taking the 23rd victory of his Formula One career. He equaled Nelson Piquet and Nico Rosberg for 12th in the all-time list of most F1 wins. Verstappen became the 17th driver to record wins at multiple world championship events in the United States, as well as the 20th driver to record 4 podiums in the country. He recorded the 63rd podium finish of his career, moving ahead of David Coulthard and into the top 10 of most podiums in Formula One. Red Bull recorded their 3rd victory in the United States. Verstappen's win made the Miami Grand Prix the first time that Mercedes have not won the first race at a brand new venue since Lewis Hamilton took victory for McLaren at the 2012 United States Grand Prix. It was also the first time since then that the first race at a new venue was not won by the pole sitter, and the first race at a new track not to be won by a Mercedes-powered car since Sebastian Vettel's victory for Red Bull at the 2011 Indian Grand Prix. Back to Saturday now, where Charles Leclerc secured pole position, taking the 12th pole of his Formula One career, and equaling Gerhard Berger and David Coulthard for 33rd in the all-time list of most F1 poles. Leclerc took Ferrari's 14th pole position in the United States, the team's first in the country since Michael Schumacher took pole at Indianapolis for the 2006 United States Grand Prix. Lando Norris was eliminated from the Miami Grand Prix in a collision with Pierre Gasly. Norris's retirement was his first since the 2021 Hungarian Grand Prix. That means that Charles Leclerc inherits the longest active finishing streak, having finished all of the last 16 races. Like Norris, Leclerc's last retirement was on the opening lap of last year's Budapest race. And finally, with Leclerc finishing as runner-up, Claire Regazzoni remains the last pole sitter to win the first race at a new venue in the United States. He did so at Long Beach for the United States Grand Prix West back in 1976. Six new US venues have joined the calendar since then, with the pole sitter failing to win the first race at all of them, Caesars Palace, Detroit, Dallas, Phoenix, Kota, and Miami.
Nice one, Nicky. You can follow him, of course, across the race weekends at Lights Out is where you can find him on Twitter. Some brilliant stats and facts. So after Miami, we come back to Europe. Next couple of Grand Prix in a week's time, we've got the Spanish Grand Prix. We'll be back to preview that next week. And then, of course, Monaco follows that. So a couple of glitzy ones on the way.
Yeah, expect some upgrades for the Spanish Grand Prix. It's normally the time of the season where most of the teams will upgrade heavily their car. We're looking at the cost cap as well this season. Apparently, it might affect Red Bull more than any other team because their reliability issues may mean that they need to spend a little bit of money to sort that out. And obviously, they're under the cost cap, so that could be an interesting proposition. We will be back to preview the Spanish Grand Prix next week. The week after that, the podcast won't be out until a Thursday. That's because I'm in Spain myself. And in fact, I thought, you know what? I might even go to the Spanish Grand Prix. I'm staying in a little town near Benidorm, and I looked, and I can get a train to Barcelona, and the price of the tickets for the Spanish Grand Prix, probably the cheapest of the entire Formula One year. So I thought, yeah, cheapskate.
I can see why you're attracted to it.
I can afford that. So so I might even go to the Grand Prix myself. I'm not sure. But anyway, we will be back next week to preview the Spanish Grand Prix. Until then, take care of yourselves.
Follow Two Soft Compounds on Twitter and Facebook. Search for Two Soft Compounds. Two Soft Compounds is a talk about media production. All opinions are our own.